This is special. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. My name is Paul E. And my home group is the Spiritual Solutions Group in Sag Harbor, Long Island. And this is like, I walked in here, and here I got Annie, and I know her from the very beginning, and Marilyn, and I looked at her, and I know her and Joe from the very beginning. And then I come over here, and she tells me that, wow, from 32 years ago when I was in Stepping Stones, that I wasn't in Stepping Stones, she was. I was on the board of directors. What were they thinking? Anyway, I love laughing. And so if you really don't want to laugh tonight, you still have time to get out. Because that's what this whole thing's about, in my opinion. I mean, you can do steps and all this other thing, find God, everything else. The reality is, what got my attention when I got to that 101 club was laughter. Because if you were anything like me, you hadn't laughed for a very long time. You know, we're in that pitiful and incomprehensible place of demoralization. You know, Susan, for our birthday. In other words, the key is, and I'm just blessed, I keep going to meetings. You know, Russell sent me an email this morning. Everybody knows Russell, right? You're all part of his flock. No, because he only, like, asks me to speak when he's very desperate. Because then after you hear me, you never come back to hear him. And he knows that. He knows that. So here's what happened. So he sent me an email this morning, and I love him, by the way. His sobriety date is January 19th or 20th, 1981. And my sobriety date, by the grace of God, is February 12th, 1980. So there's a time, there's like 19 days when Russell can say, I have the same amount of time as Paul E. So when I call him to wish him happy anniversary, I say, you better get to a lot of meetings so you can say that. But now he's still a year behind. So anyway, he sent me an email this morning. He says, Paul, I'm speaking, I'm doing this emotional sobriety thing at 7:30 at the B'nai Torah, which is right near where I live down here. He says, if you want, we can go to dinner before at 5:30 or 6:30, or we can go to dinner afterwards at 9 o'clock. And I sent him back an email. It was early this morning before I left the house. I sent him back an email. I said, Russell, if we go to dinner either before or after, do I have to go to the meeting to listen to you? He says, no, not necessary. I said, okay, fine. So then I get home, and I didn't make a decision yet. And then he calls me up. You know, he's coughing. Everything. He says, Paul, I hate to ask you this. Would you do me a favor? I said, what? I'm not coming to the meeting to hear you. He says, no, would you do me a favor and step in for me? Russell, you don't have to say it twice to me. It's the greatest thing in the world. So, and when Marilyn reminded me of that Lou Lieberbaum story, by the way, I didn't give him that name. Kenny Kane did. I was just the one who put it out. But anyway, man, it's such a privilege and a blessing to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the secret to this thing is to get grateful. And if you can't get grateful, find a sponsor, a mentor, or a guide that's going to help you get grateful. Because what happens here is so far beyond belief. I mean, you know, I still pinch myself daily. I mean, I'm one of the, and they said this early on, by the way, so if you're sober a long time and you're still going to meetings, you're right on schedule. Because they told me, either Kenny Kane or Jim Sullivan, you know, some of the people that were here, you know, they had 10 years or so when I got sober, and they looked at me after a couple months. They say, you know, you're okay. You're going to be coming to AA for a very long time. And I looked and I said, why would you say that? They said, because only the sick ones keep going to meetings. So if you see someone like myself, okay, that's in, like, meetings all the time and has a lot of time, they got some real issues. I mean, I'm a person, right, Bobby? I mean, I still go to a meeting a day almost. I mean, I know there's got to be something wrong with that. But you know what? I really love it to this very minute. Because if I wasn't here tonight, I wouldn't see Marilyn and help her celebrate 7 years. Okay? And I remember from that back room in the 101 Club. That's 32 years ago. That's back when I was still a chick magnet. I mean, really? Didn't they have to lock the doors at Stepping Stones when I came there? I mean, you understand something. I was tall. I mean, still tall, but I wasn't fat. I was 145 pounds at a size 31 waist. And I walked around, man. I was it. I am no longer it. I promise you that. I promise you that. Anyway, in case you have a hearing problem, I'm from New York. And and New York and I, we parted company, you know, and they asked me to leave. And that was in 1979. As a matter of fact, the way I like to sum up my story, and I will do this because I don't really want to tell a drunk luck or a drug luck. The last person I heard say that, they were still in high school 45 minutes later. But I'm really not going to do that. This is the way I can sum it up. I'm from Queens in New York City, and in 1965, the Beatles came to Shea Stadium. And we stormed the fences because I lived right near there, and I woke up 15 years later. That's my story. From 1965 to Woodstock to the Newport Jazz Festival to Harlem to heroin to methadone to overdoses to suicides. 15 years. 4 years, it was cool. By the way, I'm not against booze and drugs. I think they're great. I swear to God. If this was still 1966 when I was partying, 1967, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, let's get the party started, I'd still be there. However, 1969 came, and once the Woodstock ended, that was the end of my party. It was the last time I enjoyed getting loaded. So that next 11 years, that's the hell, misery, and degradation the Big Book talks about. And pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And we all know we've all had to go to some really sick lengths to stay out there. And the lengths that you have to go to stay in here, they pale by comparison. That's why when people, I was just somewhere over the weekend at a meeting and someone says, well, I don't know if I could do all the work that's required to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. I say, well, the only thing that I thought of when he said that, there was once a snowstorm in New York City, a real bad one, and they closed the Grand Central Parkway. I had these big boots like Abraham Lincoln, and I tied them up, and I walked over the Triborough Bridge to Harlem, because that's work, because I needed to get there. I've never had to tie up my boots to come to an AA meeting, or to write a fourth step, or to get a sponsor, or to try to beg God for help. And you spoke about that James story, and not James from the Corinthians. This is James, our husband or somebody, whoever. I mean, really, this is the only difference between Russell and me. This isn't going to be a Corinthians meeting. No, I tell him that all the time. This is Alcoholics Anonymous as we understood him. I don't care how you understand him, and it doesn't matter how I understand it. Just find something bigger than you. Russell didn't get that memo yet, and I tell him that all the time. Because that's the main thing. It says it everywhere. It talks about God. It says as we understood him. Not as Marilyn or me or Steve or Susan. As we understood, individually, not collectively. Just find a power, like Marilyn said. And realize because you got here, because you can't manage your own life. And that's really the key. But when you said that about James and how we want, you know, we beg. There's a lot of people that are sick right now. And when we do a moment of silence or I'm praying in the house, I'm thinking about my friends and my relations that are very sick, physically. You know, look, you get older, you see people, they get cancer, and they get hepatitis C, and they get all of this other stuff, heart conditions. So it brought me back to my father, God rest his soul. I had 6 months sober, and my father was my closest friend. I don't come from an abusive family. I come from a family where my father really wanted the best for me. He went into hock so many times to keep me out of long-term prison sentences. He was a New York City cab driver. He sold his cab to keep me from getting sentenced to 15 years in prison. Because, you know, that's just what he did, you know, no better or worse. But then I finally moved down here in the summer of 79, and I find, actually my first meeting was a God story, which I'll probably tell. It was a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. It was the first Narcotics Anonymous meeting in all of Broward County, ever. Now everybody knows now there's 1,500 a week. This was the first one. There was one freaking meeting. To me, it continually overwhelms me when I think about it or when I speak about it. Because here's what happened. I wasn't even at a bottom. I was sort of at a top. By this time, I was on government disability insurance because I flipped out. They were paying me a lot of money because I had made a lot of money working. And I was living down in Florida. There weren't that many people looking for me. And I didn't have a habit. So, I mean, I was, like, certainly not at the bottom. My bottom was 74, 5, 6 in the state mental hospital in New York. I mean, those bottoms, you know, Creedmoor State Hospital was a bottom. But here, I was doing okay. So I read an article in the Miami Herald, which to this day, no matter how long I'm blessed to be allowed to stay sober, even though there's been a zillion spiritual experiences since that day, to this day is still my, whatever you want to call it, aha moment, whatever word you want to use. I'm reading this article, and it's an interview with two junkies, alcoholics just like me, and they were sober and Alcoholics Anonymous, and they talked about this brand new program they just started called Narcotics Anonymous. And it would tell where the meeting was on 6th Street in Fort Lauderdale. And so I made the phone call to the number, and they had some guy call me back, and he picked me up, and he took me to this meeting. And I went into this room. It was at the St. Francis Mission, Pastor Connie's Mission in downtown Fort Lauderdale. And I walked in there, and it was a dark room, and there were six desperados sitting there. I mean, certainly, like, wasn't anything if you want what we have. I mean, on my best day, I wouldn't want what my worst. Ray Charles wouldn't want what they had. No, there were some desperados there. I mean, tattoos, long hair. And those were the women. No, I mean, just like... No, I mean, there were some really characters, scars, you know. And so I got up to leave. You know, I went to this guy, Curtis, and I said, you know what? Sorry to bother you, but if I ever need this place, I'll give you a call. And I'm walking out the room. Now, maybe someone afterwards could explain to me how this happened. I know you can, Marilyn. You guys can. But this is, to this day, so overwhelming 34 and a half years later to me. Here's what happened. At the exact minute, at or about 8:27 p.m. on Tuesday night, August 12th, 1980, as I'm walking out of this little Lutheran ministry on Southeast 6th Street in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in walks a guy from my block in Queens, New York City. At the exact minute, not a minute earlier and not a minute later, but that exact minute. So, you know, I mean, we ran together. We did everything together. And so I end up, like, we hugged, and I end up back in the room, and I went and got a cup of coffee. And this is the second thing that happened. I sit down, and there was a table in the front, and Mark had been asked to speak that night. Okay, now, here's what you've got. So I'm sitting there, he's telling his story. I didn't need to listen to it because I lived it with him. His arrests were in the paper just like mine. Here's when I started to pay attention. He sat in the front of that room and he said, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink or a drug for 6 months. Now Mark, like myself, couldn't go 6 weeks. Couldn't go 6 days. As a matter of fact, the only time I ever refused a drink or a drug is if I misunderstood the question. I mean, I'm looking around here, that's the kind of people you look like. You know, I'm not the kind of guy that ever said I had enough. I had enough when I'm unconscious. And then even if I hear the question, I'm going to go like that, you know. So, and that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. If you haven't had enough of these good feelings, keep coming. Because they keep getting better and better. And when I think they can't get any better, it gets better yet. That's why I keep coming. I promise you there were other things I could do tonight. I promise you. I have an incredibly full, beautifully blessed life. However, when Russell asked, I said, yeah, okay, sure. So what I'm telling you is if you're not sure that you belong here, stick around long enough till you get sure. Okay? I always say if you're new or you're coming back, welcome home. You're off the hook. And I don't care how many times you've been in and out of this thing. This, thank God there's no limits to that. I have a lot of my closest friends, they bounced in and out for a zillion years. Then they get sober, man, and that's their path. My path was the day I got here was the end of the end. By the grace of God, I picked up one white chip, and I'm still riding on that one white chip because I really believed and still believe today the next time I use will be the last time I use. I was given this one shot. Many people get 100 shots. I'm petrified of drinking or drugging, and I'm not ashamed to admit it. I am petrified. I've done a lot to stay sober in my sobriety. I've gone to any lengths. At 8 years sober, as a big shot in Alcoholics Anonymous, I checked into treatment. Not having drank and not having drugged, and it wasn't a special treatment center. It was a 28-day treatment center. And it wasn't for advanced recovery. It was for recovery so I wouldn't lay down on the freaking railroad tracks. After 8 years of active, involved sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous, we all get our stuff to deal with. And you either deal with it or you don't. If you don't, you drink. Or you use, or you die, or you go to prison. If you deal with it, your life's going to get better. It's going to pass. Everything passes. So what started this whole tirade was when I was talking about James and then went to the Corinthians. And anyway, so. But what happened is my dad, I can't believe I'm really able to remember that. You know, I may start doing commercials for the benefits of shock treatment. No, I swear to God, the older I get, I like see the flashbacks of the shock treatment, and I think that's what just brought me right back to where I was. What a cool thing, better living through chemistry. Anyway, so my dad, I get sober in February of 1980. He got diagnosed with cancer. Multiple myeloma, it was a brand new disease back then, blood disease, in November of 79. And so I was obviously flying up after I got sober. I'd go up, we'd spend some time. I had just under 6 months, and I'm in his bedroom, and we're talking, you know, and everybody knows what happens to people with cancer. It's a big guy like me, and here he was wasting away. And it was the middle of August 1980, and I'm standing in his bedroom, and I'm telling him 6 months worth of what you guys had taught me. Dad, easy does it. I mean, what else do you know? Easy does it. Guy dying of cancer, he's in total pain. Easy does it. So then, and I knew one other thing that I said to him. I said, Dad, this too shall pass. Well, that was more than he really was quite capable of listening to at that minute. But here's the message. He banged his fist on the dresser when I said that. I had under 6 months, and he looked at me and he said, Paul, I'm dying. I lived a good life. Are you still going to your meetings? 6 months of what you people had done to me convinced him more than any psychiatrist, psychologist, jail, mental hospital, treatment center, rehab, of everything. Methadone, everything, and you guys had worked on me for under 6 months, and he saw it. That's the power of the power. That's the power of what we sell here. I didn't believe in God. I couldn't even say the word. But you know what the bottom line is? You don't need to say anything. You just stick around long enough and let it happen. That's what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. It washes over you. The blessings wash over you. And that's what continues to happen, so I continue to show up. So anyway, so my dad passed August 29th, 1982, and I had 6 months, a little over 6 months. And I know as sure as I'm standing here, and then my mom passed in the 90s, late 90s, they both know everything that's going on. It's my own belief. You either believe it or you don't. It doesn't really matter. See, I don't try to sell you into believing like me. I believe it. Whether I'm right or wrong, I don't know. No one ever came back and said, hey, Paul, this is pretty cool up here. We got big poker games. I mean, no one did that. So, you know, no one really knows. I mean, you could talk like you know. No one really knows. I think I know, but you know what? I'm, like, not rushing to find out. Okay? I'm right here today, and I'm enjoying today. And that's why they call it the present, because it's a gift. We got it today. You live in today. And whatever else is going to happen, it's going to happen. I mean... sponsorship. I don't know if Russell talks about that, but I'm going to talk about it. No, because Russell may not need a sponsor, you know what I mean? I mean, I know his sponsor, but, you know. He pays his sponsor to come here and speak. I've watched him, trust me. Send him the tape. But sponsorship to me, the second most important thing to getting Alcoholics Anonymous. You get here, somehow, however, whoever got you here, whatever got you here, but now you can't think your way through this. We have 12 steps. And what is a sponsor? For those of you old enough to remember AAA, the American Automobile Association, they're probably still in business, but they don't, they used to have these things called triptychs, like where you're going on a trip, let's say I'm going from Florida to New York, and I call up and I say, yeah, I need a triptych to go from Fort Lauderdale to New York City. And 3 days later in the mail, this big thing would arrive. And everybody's shaking their head because this is like an AARP meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Looking around here, I mean, you go to some of these young kids, they look at you, what are you talking about, AAA? I mean, come on, what are you kidding me? They think it's a new drug, AAA. So, and on this triptych, what it tells you, all right, you go here, go north on the turnpike, and it says, but right here, there's construction on Sample Road. So go slow. And then it says there's no tolls. You have to have an easy pass, or else you can't take the turnpike. And then when you get a little bit further north, it's going to tell you where there's real construction, and the road's narrow to one lane. And then it's going to tell you where there's really dangerous crossings up ahead, and then it's also going to tell you where there's smooth sailing. And then it's also going to tell you where there's lodging. And it's also going to tell you where you can get some food. And it's also going to tell you where there's gas. And you know why that is? Because they mapped out the trip. And that's what a sponsor is. Someone that's mapped out the trip through his own experience, strength, and hope, so that when you ask him, well, what happens now? I got 5 months and whatever the situation. Invariably, he knows the answer. Why? Not from the book, because he's lived it. Let me tell you what happened to me. And that's all that sponsorship is. So to me, I still have a sponsor today. I've had four sponsors. Two of them died sober. God rest their soul. Fred T. and Ray Allen. My first sponsor got loaded after a while, and I was blessed to put him back into treatment. And he has 5 or 6 years now. He lives up in northern Florida. God bless you, Nancy. God bless you. You're welcome. And so, he has, and he will continue to. This is like a good meeting. I really should have been here for the last 5 weeks. I just invited myself. Sadly, I'm not going to be in Florida, whoever this other guy is. Well, you said it's funny. I doubt it. No, I don't even know who he is, but he's probably not. So in any case, here's a story. Has anyone ever been thrown out of an AA meeting? I have. No, let me share with you the story. And it's a story I never want to forget for any of you big shot, long-term sobriety, think you have the answers. Listen to this. Now, when I got sober down here, I was flying up north a lot when my dad was sick, and then even afterwards, you know, there was great AA meetings in my old neighborhood, and Ray Allen had a guy he got sober with up there that he hooked me up with, Bernie Sachs, God rest his soul. And so I met Bernie, and I would pick up my ex-running partner, Michael Arkin, God rest his soul. Did anybody ever notice there's a lot of rest his souls in my... Trust me, I mean, like, I can't wait for the person to do my eulogy and say, wow, yeah, well, now he's finally rested his soul. There's a line of people waiting to do that. Problem is, the person going to do my eulogy hasn't been born yet. So I would pick Michael Arkin up, who was the most obnoxious. Would look at someone, and I'd introduce, yeah, Bernie has 12 years. Michael would look at him, who gives a shit? I mean, that was like the nicest thing he said when I brought. So I bring him, and Michael, finally, by the way, Michael did die sober, you know, 12 years sober, but this is 32 years ago I'm talking about. So that 20-year in between was a little rough. So anyway, so I'm bringing him. It was a Saturday morning meeting. I would fly up for the weekend. I'd go pick him up on Saturday early. I'd take him to this 9 o'clock meeting. There were two meetings. Then we'd go out to eat. So one weekend, I was a little jammed up, and I was time a little jammed up. I made the decision to just go to the meeting myself because it really was like not doing me any good seeing this moron having to apologize to him for everything. Everyone I introduced to him that day or next week, I had to apologize to them for what he did. And I was tired. So I go into this, true story, I walk into this meeting Saturday morning in Whitestone, New York, and Bernie is sitting there. Now, because Bernie is an old-timer like Ray Allen and like, God willing, I'll get to be, he really didn't care that much about me. His only question was, where's Michael? Because that's the important person. The newcomer is the most important person. If you're here a while, your importance is not that great anymore. So Bernie looked at me and said, hey, where's Michael? I looked at him and I said, Bernie, I made a decision that it wasn't going to benefit me to pick Michael up today because I needed the meeting. And I went through this whole thing. This is back when there was smoking in the meetings. And Bernie smoked a cigar. He stood up at the top of his lungs before the meeting started. And if I curse, you'll just have to get past it. I may not, but if I do, just tell them, oh, this is a temple, this is my house. I can do what I want. So, the big house. So he stood up and he looks at me. He says, who are you to think that you can decide when someone wants this gift that's given by the grace of God? What, you say he's not ready? Who the F are you to say that? And he looked at me, he says, Paul, get out of this meeting until you bring Michael back. Don't come back till you bring Michael back. So if you never were thrown out of an AA meeting, I was. And obviously I went and got Michael. And 20 years later, he got sober. There was a lot of grief in my life. I brought him down here to treatment. But the bottom line is, who the hell am I? What do I? I mean, I'm one screw left of who knows where I'd be. I'm like an eighth of an inch from never having made it here. At 28, I was pronounced dead. I was in a coma for 6.5 days. And now I'm making decisions on who wants this thing? What, are you kidding me? When you think about the absurdity of it, that's just how, so that's why old timers were great. And most of them are dead. That's the problem. And I'm like in the on deck circle. So what can I tell you? But I saw Kenny Kane Saturday. He's one of the few that was here when I got sober. So, you know, this whole program, it says it when we read it. And Marilyn said it about ABC. And I don't care what you did, how much you did. If you're here, you don't have to go any lower. I mean, the elevator has a lot of stops. And I've watched a lot of people, myself included, take the elevator to the basement, the sub-basement, and then a basement below. I've also buried a lot of people. So since we never know where that last shot's going to be, I promise you, whoever you are, right here, right now, you've done enough. You don't need to go any further. I'll make you another promise. If you do, whatever got you here will pale by comparison, like Marilyn was talking about drinking and not telling anyone coming here for 4 years. Think about how whack that is. Oh, yeah. I'm going to get shit-faced and I need to go see my friends at AA and hope they don't smell my breath. I mean, how sick is that? How deluded and delusional do we have to be to get whacked in our house? Oh, I'm late for the meeting. I hope I don't get a DUI on the way to the meeting. And that's what we do. And you know I'm not goofing on you. I'm saying, because that's the power of the disease. That's the power of what we're screwing around with here. So if you're here, stay. You don't have to go any further. I promise you, it's not going to get any better. And if you just accept that and surrender, 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 unconditional surrender. And it doesn't have to be all at once. Ray Allen told me the only thing you have to do perfectly is the first half of the first step. The rest of your life you could spend filling in the unmanageability, the coming of belief, all of that other stuff, because you're never going to get perfect. I promise you that. Because I've watched the people, by the way, I've been at their funerals, that got perfect in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they developed the halos. And then I watched as the halos became the noose. And then I watched as they were buried. I have no danger of ever thinking I'm perfect or ever indicating to you people that I'm bordering on perfect. I am so far from a full deck, I might be up to 23 cards right now. I don't know, but I'm in no rush. You grow at your own chosen speed in this deal, you know. If you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, that's what gets us here. But then when you're in enough pain, no matter what her name is or his name is or whatever happens when you're sober, when the pain of the pain gets great enough, then the pain of the change is not that tough. No matter what the issue is, whether it's relationships, whether it's careers, whether it's money, whether it's sex, whether it's gambling, whatever it is. I mean, there are, by the way, I've done this research, over 100 12-step programs, all taken from the 12 steps and the miracle of Bill and Bob sitting together in June of 1935. 100. And I've looked at everyone, I mean, really, everyone, overeating, undereating, bulimia, polemia, sex, drugs, love and sex, love without sex, sex without love, transsexual, I mean, everything that you could possibly imagine. I've read every one of those programs. And there's only one that I don't belong to. There's only one that I don't qualify for. And when I read it, I never forgot it. And the name of the program in New York, and they have meetings, and you can check it out, Google it tonight, Lip Balm Anonymous. As I'm standing here in front of you. Now just imagine if that was my story. Yeah, I'll tell you what, I kept buying bigger and bigger overcoats. And I went from CVS to Walgreens to Eckerd's. Then I started loading this and I got the inside jackets. I couldn't believe it. I got every flavor known to me. I couldn't get on the plane. I had some. One day, like when I have nothing to do, I'm going to go to a lip balm meeting just to say, yes, yeah, my first time here. What do I do? But other than that, every other one I qualify for. How do I run out of this time? I can't believe. This would be the ends at 11? Yes. I mean, I have all of these notes. And because Russell said it's on emotional sobriety, just to show you what I did, I had my friend Bill Wilson. I got an article on emotional sobriety written by Bill Wilson. But we can't even get into that. So if you get me back here, one day we may. It's a good 3-page article. We are not even going to open this page for you guys. We just leave them wanting more. You know what I'm saying? That's what I was always taught. Just for the record, Ray Allen's sponsor was Bill Wilson. This is his book, signed by Bill Wilson. Okay, so when I'm talking to you, I know at least I'm getting information somewhere close to the source. And, you know, it's gotten watered down in a lot of ways, but I don't water it down. If you want what we have, you do what we do. If you don't want what we have, don't worry about it. You have no chance of getting it. No, I'm serious. I mean, you know, I mean, I tell people that now, and like my sponsor, Fred, one of my sponsors, you know, he told me, call me every day at 5:30, just to let me know where you were, where you've been, blah, blah. So I call him every day at 5:30. Now I have a year and a half, I'm living on the intercoastal, my life's getting better, I'm sponsoring people, I'm a member of the community. Things are happening. And I called him every day, and I go over to Fred at the 101 Club Sunday morning. And I say, Fred, I've got a problem. He says, what's that? I said, I've called you every day for a year and a half, and you haven't called me once. Let me tell you what happened. without missing a beat. Fred, he had these little glasses, and he took them off, and he looked at me, and he says, "You know what, Paul? As soon as you have something I want, I'll be sure to give you a call." And he turned away and walked away. Now, if you said that to someone today, they report you to Intergroup. Do you know what my sponsor said to me? He told me that he walked away. He's not going to call me. Why would I call you? If I want to learn how to die, I'll be sure to give you a call. You want to learn how to live, I'd suggest you get my number. And that's basically what he said. And that's the way I give it. I can't give it any other way. That's the way I got it. That's the way I give it. And that brings up the whole end. I mean, I can't believe it. I mean, it's good that I do all of this homework, and then I get like four lines. I mean, I don't know. But here's the key. It's a privilege and a blessing to be here. It really is. And the secret, if there is one secret to Alcoholics Anonymous, it's about giving. Okay, and that's what was taught to me by these great sponsors. You can't just get the gift that everybody in this room has been given and then go over to your estate on the intercoastal or wherever you're living or on the ocean or your penthouse driving your Bentley and just not come here to give it back. Because that's being a thief. Everyone here, we were all given the gift by someone, somewhere, who took the time, in whatever manner, way, shape, or form, to say, "Hey, you know what? I think these people can help you." So however you got here, in my case, it was by prayer. My grandmother prayed for me. I know that's how I got here. You know, because then I read that article. And by the way, just to, before we go there, we're going to go here for one mental hospital jump, and then we'll go here. Because we only have 4 minutes, but I never speak late, I promise. Maybe this time. Right, about my first meeting. I never fully elaborated on that. This is the part. So Mark's walking in, God rest his soul. He died last year clean, 33 years. We picked up, we did this whole journey together. He died from prostate cancer, and Andy knows that. But he and I walked this journey together for the entire time. But here's the point. Two Jewish heroin addicts, alcoholic heroin addicts from Queens, New York City, 1,250 miles from home, in a Lutheran ministry in southeast Fort Lauderdale. As one of them is walking out of this room to continue to kill himself, that being me, God delivers Mark to intersect, because life is really all about seconds and inches. And at that moment, the direction of my life changed completely, because Mark was at this meeting to give it to me. Now, when you look at how many people have received it as a result of that, and how many people, I sponsor a guy who's now in Israel, and they're having the 30th World Convention, the 30th Convention of Narcotics Anonymous in Israel, September 13th. And he's the chairman. I sponsored him for 32 years. He got sober here. Moved to Israel 10 years ago. So, I mean, if you don't think this thing has tentacles everywhere and everyhow, so if you're here and you're getting great and you got this incredible life and you're not coming here to give it back, you're a thief. That's me. That's my opinion. If you don't like it, call your sponsor, call in a group, or call me. And any one of those, we could work it out. Because what I was taught, not only that a grateful alcoholic won't drink, but that we come here to get. And we've been given, and now we have to give. And so we give to get. And I keep giving. Because the more I give, the more I get. I have a life today with no issues. I'm happily married. I got two beautiful kids. And I've just got like this fantasy island life. From this nightmare of the 60s and 70s, I've got a fantasy island life. I'm sober, over half my life. How's that possible? There's no 66-year-old burnout, heroin addict, alcoholics that I know of. And yet I'm skipping through the deal. So what I'm telling you is if you got this thing, you better give it away. Because then you give to get. And the more you give, the more you get. And what you try to keep to yourself, you lose. For it's in the giving that it reproduces. Thanks for listening.